Hey guys, you are listening to another edition of the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick, joined by Danny Danger, no Scream Queen tonight, taking the week off. But guess what? The boys are here and we're taking over.
We're not really taking over. I mean, we've always had control. We're just not sharing it with someone else. But we're back after taking, you know, the time off from the regular FOW show due to WrestleMania and the travel for some people. You know, I guess Scream Queen having been to New Orleans and then having to double down at the old shoot job in order to make up for all the time off she took. Apparently it's taking its toll on her. Bit under the weather, but she will be back hopefully next week. Until then, it's just the old school duo of the Yellow Man in Danger here to drop some knowledge on you.
And with that knowledge we do have, first, let's start out with, you know, news that just came out today. Bruno Sammartino, the living legend, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all times, bar none, passed away at the age of 82. This is a man who started his career, had his first wrestling match December 17th, 1959, and went all the way until he had his last wrestling match, I believe, in 1987.
Nearly 30 years wrestling. Wow.
So that's quite a career, and of course, let's not forget that he's, you know, he had probably of the longest reigns in WWF history, as he held his first WWF championship for 2,803 days. His second reign was 1,237 days. So...
Well, one of he was the pretty greatest. Much, I mean, he's absolutely one of the greatest champions just by, you look at the length of time. I mean, those, in today's era, those records will not be beaten. People just don't hold championships that long. You're lucky, you know, champions, especially at WWE level. I mean, you know, CM Punk, you know, didn't go quite a year, or he went over a year, didn't he? 400 something days. And that was almost unheard of, you know? But I mean, he was the guy who pretty much was the guy for, you know, Vince Sr.'s WWF, you know, and then he was very influential on the next generation of wrestlers that would lead Vince Jr. Into his WWF and, you know, and into E, and so just a huge legacy of, not only in the ring, but apparently his outside of the ring. And he was always a professional, a gentleman. People love to use the word classy for him, that he was a class act. And so he was just kind of one of the last of, you know, this bygone era. And sadly, the wrestling world loses him today. You know, but I think through so many of the others that have come since, and of course, through, you know, things that are on YouTube and the WWE Network and all this, you can still see him and his legacy. And I think he can still, you know, he'll still be there to influence current and future generations of professional wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about Bruno Sammartino, I mean, you know, he wasn't in our era, of course. I mean, the two of us weren't even born during the height of his career. And we, yeah, like you said, we've gotten to see some stuff on the WWE Network and some stuff on YouTube. But, you know, there's always been that history, like when he did himself from, he didn't want anything to do with Vince McMahon's Attitude Era. And he, you know, held pro wrestling as such a different level that, and it was just something else that, you know, you'd look at probably one of, if not the greatest pro wrestler of all times, not having a relationship with the Fed for so long. And then it wasn't until a few years ago when, you know, Triple H reached out and they kind of looked at things and seen how WWE had evolved, you know, into this much family-friendly environment and company, and allowing those, you know, those relationships to be mended, and then finally being able to induct Bruno into the WWE Hall of Fame. That was probably the coolest thing, and I'm glad that they were able to do that before this happened. Because many times, you know, and for example, somebody like Randy Savage, who was not alive when he was inducted, and he was not able to mend whatever fences, right, and issues that he had with McMahon or the Fed. But Bruno was able to, and unfortunately, you know, he has been sick the last few months. He's been in the hospital, but at least he was able to take care of everything. And, you know, in his personal life, I'm saying in professionally with the Fed, and he's, you know, rightfully enshrined in, you know, they've got a big statue, and who knows now, probably they're going to name something after him and do it in his honor every year, which I think would definitely be cool, and it should be done for somebody like Bruno.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I assume that we, in, you know, the next several months or, you know, several years, that we'll see a lot more tributes done to Bruno, you know, similar to the way NXT did, you know, things for Dusty Rhodes, you know. Maybe there'll be some kind of event named after him, or a tournament, or, you know, they'll make a lot more of it, because he was such an, you know, an integral part in shaping not only professional wrestling, but of course WWF specifically, you know. So we should see a lot more with them and about him, you know. Possibly they'll add more of his earlier stuff onto the network, or, you know, something like that. So, as I mentioned, and you mentioned already, his legacy, you know, will live on for generations. Just all the groundwork that he laid, and even his body of work, just because he did have such a long career, and, you know, wrestled so many of the great opponents for nearly three decades.
Yeah, and we think about eras, you know, every time anybody goes back and looks at where it began, a lot of people look and talk about the Bruno Sammartino era.
Yeah, yeah. He was the king in that for a lot of years. So that was his quote. I mean, he was similar to how you would say the Hogan era, or, you know, the possibly even the Rock and Austin era. You know, he was the guy for many, many years, shaping, not only being the center post of that, but then shaping the next eras that would follow.
So with that, I've kind of been thinking just about legacy and eras and important places in life. And this is something that a lot of people have talked about. They have their Mount Rushmores of pro wrestling for whatever it is, right? And so I was kind of thinking, well, what is my Mount Rushmore of, like, the most important wrestling figures of all times? And to me, honestly, if I'm going, you know, talking about the eras and just the impact that people have made on pro wrestling, if I had to choose my, it would be Bruno Sammartino, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and Vince McMahon. That would be my Mount Rushmore right there.
So you'd have Vince, of course, because he's the mastermind behind all the other people that you mentioned. And then you pretty much have the leaders of the different generations. You know, 60s and 70s was pretty much Bruno. 80s was pretty much Hogan. 90s into the early 2000s was Steve Austin. So that's pretty much your Rushmore as far as the most important figures in professional wrestling.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I mean, I haven't really thought of mine too much. I mean, but I think you have to have Vince McMahon in there. Otherwise, I mean, like, you're fooling yourself if you don't have Vince McMahon in there, because he's, you know, or at least his dad, if anything else. I mean, depending on how how far back you want to make your Mount Rushmore, but to me, I think you have to have Gorgeous George in there, because for me personally, because he's the first in the era when it was, when it wasn't, when it was like still not sure if it was a work or not. It was very much grappling based. He was the first like character in professional wrestling. He was the first entertainer. You know, he created this persona that people hated because he was so flamboyant and he was disrespectful to wrestling. So he, you know, people would go to see him get his butt whooped, you know, get his comeuppance because he was so cocky and arrogant. So I think for him, especially into the world that it would translate into sports entertainment, I think he has to be in mind. I would have Andre the Giant, because to me, he's the first guy who spanned into popular culture. You know, not that his legacy in wrestling, but I think his legacy into popular culture, because he opened up all these doorways for people to actually, you know, in the other worlds of entertainment and sports and all this, so that guys like Hogan and Macho Man and stuff could become household names rather than just names within the professional wrestling. And yeah, so those three are off the top of mine. I think Hulk Hogan's a pretty good ad in there. Also, just because the groundwork that the others laid, you know, Gorgeous George with having a persona and Andre with being a larger than life personality that became part of popular culture. Hulk Hogan was able to take all those elements and just turn it up full speed and knock it out of the park. You know, I don't think you would have wrestling any way, shape or form that it is today without any of the work that they laid before us.
Yeah, that's pretty good there for you. I mean, I can't dispute it. They all have reasons to be in such a place. And, you know, I thought about those names myself, and I was going back and forth. I'm like, what do I feel, especially to me, it came out. But, yeah, yours is pretty good. You know, it sucks that, you know, when we talk about Mount Rushmore, there's only four guys there because,
you know, yeah, you can only do four spots. Yeah.
But I'm sure that, you know, if there was a bigger, more space, they would definitely have a lot more names. I mean, even outside of what you've mentioned and what I mentioned, I'm sure that people could come up with, you know, three other names in addition to Vince. Because I, like you said, you cannot even think about having a Mount Rushmore without having Vince McMahon Jr. in there.
Yeah.
Because without him, do we really have what we have now? I mean, WrestleMania wouldn't have existed, and who knows where pro wrestling would be at this point if they didn't have the craziness of Vince McMahon wanting to take pro wrestling and make it sports entertainment.
Yeah, make it nationwide, break down the territories and make it, you know, on television, cables, you know, across the country and all this stuff.
Yeah, so for sure. But, you know, who knows? Hey, anybody out there that has their own Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling, Twitter at FOW Radio. Let us know what it is. We'd love to hear it. The different ideas out there, different names. Man, we could just go all night just probably creating at least 10 different Mount Rushmores. With all the different names that could possibly even have a spot. I mean, think about it. We haven't even added who many call the greatest wrestler in the world in Ric Flair. You think he would be a shoo-in for that? Or somebody like The Rock, who was sort of an equal to Steve Austin in the Attitude Era, and many more. But alas, you know, it's out there. So yeah, let us know what you think. So speaking about legacies and eras, let's go to people who are now currently in the WWE building their legacies and starting their, you know, eras, kicking them off the right place. And we're going to do that with NXT, as NXT TakeOver was in New Orleans less than 2 weeks ago. And, well, we got a lot there. First of all, the first ever NXT North American champion was crowned, as Adam Cole defeated EC3, Killian Dane, Lars Sullivan, Ricochet, and Velveteen Dream to win the title in a ladder match.
Personally, the match, I could have taken it or leave it. It was probably my least favorite match on the show, and that's because it was just a spot fest. There wasn't as many stories and stuff as so many of the other matches that you would see later in the card had. With 1 hour of television, I don't really think that they need the extra title. The UK championship was kind of playing as a secondary championship anyways. So unless they're planning to do either move the UK championship and have it bounce around elsewhere and or give NXT more than 1 hour of television a week, I don't think that they necessarily need a additional title. I think WWE already has too many titles as it is. Now I'm hearing people calling for not only, for other titles as well. I'm like, guys, pretty soon every single match is going to be a title match. It's not going to be any fun. The titles aren't going to mean anything because everybody's going to have one.
Well, to that point, if you include the UK championship on an NXT takeover, all five matches are title matches at this point. But yeah, I agree with you. A spot fest is everything it was supposed to be. We did get to see Ricochet and EC3
make their debuts, yeah. Ricochet almost killing himself, multiple times, like he does. EC3 looked great, coming in there in his when he had his time. But also the problem with a ladder match and a ladder match with six guys is that each guy only gets a couple minutes to really shine. And I guess that each guy in that match took their opportunity to do such, and everybody came out looking good. Adam Cole looking very much within Adam Cole, playing, the opportunist, waiting till everybody else is beat up and then trying to run and steal the title multiple times before he was finally able to do so.
I definitely did enjoy it for what it was. Like you said, the stories of, we're coming out later. But hey, 30 plus minutes to get the crowd going and get them all hyped up and see some flippy stuff, which they love, and especially this crowd, right? Where you have all the hardcore wrestling fans in one place. Of course, they had to choose between different shows, but most of them, of course, went to NXT. You're gonna get people who love this stuff. So, know your audience, right?
Absolutely.
So Adam Cole has the championship. He still has to wrestle later on in the Triple Threat Tag Team match for the NXT titles and the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. So we can go ahead and move on to that. We'll be a little out of order, but that's okay. Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly defeat Authors of Pain and Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong to win the titles and the trophy. Roderick Strong turns on Pete Dunne and joins Undisputed Era.
As much as I enjoyed the match was good and exciting, the moment at the end was completely unexpected, where Roderick turns on his partner. But to me, the story doesn't make sense there, because Roderick Strong's whole story since he's been in NXT is he's wanted to be a champion. Okay. So he stops himself from being a champion. His partner was getting the pin. His partner was going to win. Had he waited 1 second more, he would have accomplished his goal since coming into NXT as being a champion. Okay. Yet he decides to throw that away and give the championships to the Undisputed Era and join them seemingly to the shock of Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. So you can't play that this was some long-term thing that he worked out with them and he was fooling everybody and all this, because there was no plan with the Undisputed Era, because they didn't expect that he was going to turn and join. So unless they have time to fill in and write additional parts of the story, but looking at it after the fact, I was like, this doesn't make sense, because everything his character's ever said goes to the contrary of his actions there. If he had possibly the Undisputed Era been like, yes, that was our plan. And like, then they were going to set up, to where Roderick could, help Roderick win a singles championship by beating Pete Dunne or something. Then you say, okay, that's that. But, And that may be the plan. Maybe Roderick championship with with an Englishman. I don't know. But fantastic moment. Action in the match. Story perspective, as it sits right now without any additional information and promos and stuff, it just doesn't make as much sense.
Yes, I mean, it was a good match. It was under 12 minutes, especially with the long opening and the very long main event, which we'll talk about in a bit. I thought that it was perfect. Plus, Authors of Pain, Undisputed Era, we've kind of seen these guys go at it over and over again. So they did not need a long match. The ending was, like you said, quite unexpected. Not anywhere where I thought they were going. But see, I don't know if you've looked at some of the social media stuff on the website, but, you know, when the Undisputed Era is taking pictures after the show, Roddy was wearing one of the tag team championships. So since Adam Cole is the U.S. champion, I'm thinking that they're going to do the tag titles like other trios and other, you know, groups out there where, you know, anybody in the group can defend the championships, you know, Freebird rules. That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe, but then still, why would he? It still doesn't make sense. In, you know, like, why wouldn't he just share the belt with one guy instead of having to share it with two?
Because maybe at the end he didn't trust Pete, but he knew that this was his way in. You know, it's possible. I mean, they're advertised to be on NXT TV next week, where I'm assuming they will explain their actions,
and Roddy maybe will explain a little bit about it.
Right. So no one knows, but you know, everybody says that, you know, there's an advantage to, you know, numbers.
I hope they don't do the Freebird rule again, because they just recently used it with the New Day. You know, and the thing is,
and technically Sanity.
Yeah, and didn't switch around. Alexander and Eric Young were ever the champions. At the match to earn the championship, it looked like it was going to be Killian Dane and Wolf, but Killian Dane hopped down and Eric hopped on there. But Eric and Wolf were the only ones that actually defended the championships. So my thing is that you don't want to use the that rule too much, because then why doesn't everybody just use it? You know, if guys could just kind of take it and just make it like their own and be like, oh yeah, cool, we're going to use this. Like, why don't the Bar do that? Why don't they add a third person? And, you know, why don't the Usos, you know, bring in a third guy and do all that instead of having the New Day be the only ones who can do it? You know, like, if you do it too frequently, it loses some of the specialness, I guess.
Yeah, and you know what? I wonder what the original plans were going into who was going to win the Dusty Rhodes Classic and face the champions at TakeOver. I wonder if, you know, when Fish got injured, they decided, well, we want to keep the titles on the Undisputed Era. So then they reworked things and then decided, okay, let's do it this way. And let's have Roddy join them. Maybe he wasn't supposed to join them. Maybe he was supposed to continue this long process. Maybe he was supposed to be on the ladder match and maybe be a contender for the North American Championship in the future. But then maybe things had to change. Well, obviously things had to change after the Fish injury.
Yeah, Tyler Bate for hurt first, and that opened the door for them to put Roddy in, and then Bobby Fish got hurt the match to defend. I mean, they shifted things around with that, and I get that. So what I'm hearing now is the storyline seemingly will lead to, it looks like they're going to do a 3-on-3 British Strong Style. They want to call themselves Mustache Mountain and Pete Dunne against the Undisputed Era. Seems where people think it's going to head. That Pete's going to get outnumbered. Tyler Bate is back, so Tyler and Trent Seven will come, and then it'll be, you know, versus Roderick Strong, Kyle, and Adam Cole.
Yes, well, actually, I believe I did see it's advertised. They're bringing back the 2-day United Kingdom Championship Tournament. And it's going to be in one of those nights. I believe in night one, we're going to see British Strong Style versus Undisputed Era. Now, how it's going to lead to that, I'm sure it's on the tapings. I have stayed away from most of those spoilers, but I believe that's where it's heading. So British Strong Style versus Undisputed Era. So we're going to see the UK Championship Tournament, you know, with the number one contender being decided to face Pete Dunne. So that should be something fun. I mean, the first one last year was real good, and hopefully, you know, they use a good mix of talent. Well, now anybody can challenge for the UK Championship, as we found out this past year. You do not have to be from the UK.
In the United Kingdom again, I would think that it would be at least mostly UK as opposed to, like, Sullivan in there, and here's Fabian Aichner and their regular NXT guys, you know, that are developmental guys to do it. Just throw them in there.
Well, we'd like to think so. So, well, I guess we'll find out later this year. All right. So next match, Shayna Baszler defeats Ember Moon by submission. Referee stoppage to win the women's championship in under 13 minutes. Pretty good match. Sort of, you know, I think that this need to end only one way with Shayna winning. And I think that, man, they protected Ember very well by not submitting. Very strong outing, both women. Great match. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a really good match, and I think both women looked really good. We had talked when doing kind of our predictions that Shayna seemed to be the better one for long term, and we've now seen with Ember getting the call up to Raw, Shayna will stay down in NXT and be the bully, because chasing the top of the bully is a fantastic story. You have, you know, people who could be gunning for her. Dakota Kai, of course, looking to get revenge. Nixon Newell has returned. You have Kairi Sane, of course, looking to continue her feud with Shayna, as they were in the finals of the Mae Young Classic. Shayna also handed Kairi her first singles loss in WWE by submission. You know, and then, you know, countless others as well that could come and float around. But Ember looked really good. Like you said, she looked really strong. She looked really good. I think it was, for both women, it was a very, very strong, without doing the, we're just going to stand in the center of the ring and trade forearm shots, or we're going to get jumped on our head and yell and stand back up. Because that's, right now, that's kind of become the stereotype of strong style. But really what strong style stuff is about, it's about the heart and determination and fire to keep fighting back. Like where Shayna, you know, has possibly dislocated her shoulder. So what does she do during the match? Rather than give up and rather than let Ember continue to beat up on her arm, she goes and starts smashing it against the center post to try and pop her shoulder back into place so that she can continue fighting. Therefore showing the heart and the will to carry on and fight above the physical limitations of her own body to win. Ember Moon doing the same. You know, a lot of her moves were reversed. You know, she went for the eclipse and Shayna caught her, and Ember tried to fight, you know, was able to fight out and reverse the choke and several times, fighting. She could scramble to get out, survive in the move longer. Facial work by Ember too, as she was going down, like you could see like this closed captioned like a picture where you can see, and it's like this is the exact moment when her character realized like this title's leaving me today. You know, it's like right before her eyes started to close and she's unconscious and the ref stops it. They're like, that's, you can read it on her face, like this is the moment where she has a realization that like this is the end of my championship reign. Excellent work by both women. I think they told a great story. I'm a big fan of storytelling like that, where both people have injured parts and the opponents keep working on them. You know, every time Ember would try to come back, she'd go back to work on Shayna's arm, trying to get out of the choke. Shayna was, you know, having to adjust her attacks, her movements, her submissions, because one of her arms was so badly damaged. So she couldn't do the sleeper choke like you normally would. She had to kind of do it with one arm. And they were talking about her posting off her own head, you know, to help tighten the arm around the neck. Just fantastic story work. Fantastic. I think that match is where you show the value of commentary to a match as well, because watching that live, a lot of those subtleties you may not have been able to understand. You may not have been able to see very well, let alone understand. You know, like when she runs over and just starts smashing her shoulder in the post, you're like, what the heck is she doing? Like, most people watching that live probably had no idea what she was doing, but that's where the commentators are there to help, you know, attempt to explain the details of the story, and fill in the gaps and say, oh, you know, such and such is an old trick, you know, blah, blah, you would smash it against the wall and, you know, like these kind of things. So I think it was great work by all involved in the storytelling of that match.
Not only offensively, but the selling. I think that's one of my biggest pet peeves. It's like, okay, well, you know, when somebody's doing something on the offense and, you know, they're also attacking a partner's injured and they're focusing on, okay, that's great. But it's like the selling part is what bugs me. Not always a lot of selling. It's like, oh, maybe they're selling the wrong part because they forgot which leg or arm is supposed to be injured and whatever not. So it's kind of like, to me, my thing is, okay, well, let me see how well you can sell. And then when you do that and when it's believable and I'm into it and I think, oh, my goodness, you are really hurt, then that gets me invested and I really can appreciate every single part of the match.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's so many times where, you know, somebody will be working over the leg and the person's laying on the mat for several minutes, like selling, like they can't even walk. And then it's their time to start hitting some moves and they just start running back and forth across the ring and hopping off the second rope and stuff. And it's like, you could barely stand on that foot a second ago. Now I'm just supposed to believe that you can just do all this effortlessly without even limping and all this. It's easy to pull you out of the match. But everybody, both ladies in particular did really well. I'm excited to see where, you know, the challengers trying to topple Shayna, how they line up and how those matches go, with her essentially as the bully. And I'm excited to see what Ember can do on the main roster.
Excited. I think, you know, Shayna is in the perfect position right now, where we had Asuka as the this force that couldn't be beaten, but as a babyface, now you have this force, this bully, that may not be able to be beat. And I think she will be beat. You know, there's only going to be
eventually
one undefeated run, I think, in the women's division, at least for a long time, it should be Asuka. But for a while, until she eventually gets beat, she's going to run through a lot of names. And, you know, like you mentioned, there's plenty of challengers out there, a lot of underdogs. So that'll be really fun to see. All right, so moving on, the NXT Championship on the line under 20 minutes. Aleister Black defeats Andrade Cien Almas to win the championship. I thought this match was just great from top to bottom. I'm a huge fan of both guys, specifically Cien Almas, who I think is probably, to me, I gotta say, maybe not necessarily comeback of the year, but what's the other one that I'm thinking about? What's the word when somebody rebounds from one year to another? I can't remember. There's a word for it, but I can't remember. Anyways, most improved. He was the most improved wrestler in all of pro wrestling, in my opinion. And man, he took NXT by storm in his own way. He got over as a huge heel. Of course, a lot of props to Zelina Vega by his side.
Yeah, helping to kind of round out his character.
Absolutely. And here, Black, who's this guy who's, you know, still a very much unknown to a lot of people. You know, just this dark guy who nobody knows who he is. I thought the match was great, and I thought that, hey, having, you know, Zelina Vega try to interfere multiple times, and then at the end, that being what brought down the demise of Sin Almas, and eventually not working, failing, and is what helped Black finally do what he needed to do to win the championship. I loved it, and I think that Black is going to be a great champion, and I look forward to a lot of great matches now.
With that match, now, honestly, after the tag title match, anticipation of Ciampa and Gargano, kind of overlooking this match, both guys a lot, but at the same time, I just felt that compared to some of the other matches, this didn't really have the heat, the fire, the story. They tried to build it there, but I think Gargano Ciampa overshadowed everything because it was so big. So the match started out kind of slow to me, but as it went on, took off really, really well, hooked in well. Like you said, Selena's, several times she interfered, and Andrade had, ultimately won the championship and helped retain it in part with, with Selena working as a duo, her interference. So for it to kind of backfire a little bit and Black to be able to capitalize and take advantage, hitting the Black Mass over her as she was being held by Andrade, was just fantastic. Yes, very big fan of Black. I'd like to see where he goes in the matchups that they can do with him. Does Ciampa start going that way? Does Gargano start going that way? What about, your Lars Sullivan, what about Ricochet? Does Ricochet maybe stay and try to go for the North American champion? Have him versus Black could be a very interesting kind of clash of personalities, not just a clash of wrestling styles. That could be a very good story down the line. So yet again, another strong match, good story, good wrestling action, pretty much what we've come to expect from NXT TakeOvers, TakeOver Championship matches as well. You think of the ones that CN had, you think of the ones that Drew McIntyre had before him, and even going back, Balor, Nakamura, Owens, Joe, just top-notch caliber professional wrestling storytelling within the context of a match. You want to talk story in the context of a professional wrestling match, the unsanctioned main event did that just about better than anything else in a long time has.
Yeah, and we got over 30 minutes of that match. 30 minutes that did not feel that much, to be honest. Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa showing what they're two of the best in the world. They had a story to tell. Instead, you and I, Danny, we had to see them in one of their last few indie dates before they came to the main Raw, before they came to NXT full time. And then they had that long title run, the long tag team run chasing the titles, and then, going to Ciampa,
winning them, and yes.
And then the injury that prolonged it. But hey, they still found ways to keep those guys.
Keep it interesting.
And fresh. And then the return. And then, Johnny Wrestling versus the Black Card. Here we are, NXT. Johnny's career with NXT was done. But he had one more shot. If he wanted to be reinstated, he needed to defeat Ciampa. Ciampa was ready to get rid of Johnny for good. These two hated each other and had some proof. They main event to TakeOver New Orleans, probably one of the biggest TakeOver audiences of all times, if not the biggest. And man, in those 37 plus minutes, they put on a show.
Storytelling, storytelling, storytelling. And it, to me, I've come to realize this with Gargano in NXT as he's been able to develop this even more with him, especially him and Ciampa. Did amazing was not just the moves they're doing, but all the stuff, everything else surrounding the moves. Yes, they did a lot of cool moves. They had cool exchanges, flashy maneuvers. They threw everything with ill intent and malice, so you believed guys were literally trying to hurt each other. When they were punching and kicking each other, it looked as though they were trying to kick through each other as opposed to just kicking to the guy, if you're able to catch that, as understand the meaning there. All the things in between. It's the facial expressions, the body movements, the you know, all the moments and playbacks to the different aspects of their entire feud. You know, bringing the crutch back in, brace in, because essentially Ciampa gave his knee trying to defend the championships, and he and Johnny lost them, and then he essentially kind of blamed Johnny for not holding up his part of their team and trying to make it about him, etc. So, you know, they brought in to play the knee and the knee brace. Finishing moments were amazing as they played back to their match against each other in the Cruiserweight Classic, where Ciampa was realizing the things he was going to have to do to put Johnny down. He pulls his knee pad down and all this, like he's going to just hurt Johnny, but he doesn't want to. He's his friend. So he hesitates. Johnny's able to defeat him and get the win. This time it's the other way around. Johnny starts to realize the things he's going to have to do in order to beat Ciampa. He breaks the crutch in half. It's now broken metal. He's going to stab Ciampa in the face with it, and he stops himself. This is a guy. This is another human being. This is a person who I once considered, you know, a very close, almost a member of my own family. You know, he has second thoughts. You know, next to him, similar to how they sat down next to each other after Johnny had beaten Ciampa in the Cruiserweight Classic, and Ciampa tries to take the shot coming and is able to catch him, and the knee that Ciampa sacrificed had to wear because that was his undoing. Just amazing selling. They gave each other a beating, but most of all, they put on a spectacular, spectacular show.
It was definitely a match for the ages. Many people calling it the best wrestling match ever. Not sure if I go there myself, but it was definitely a fantastic match and one of the greatest NXT matches I've ever seen. But again, like you said, there's a lot of storyline, storytelling. So much that people were invested in with those two from the beginning, and it was a great way to end the NXT TakeOver in New Orleans. And Johnny is back. What does that mean for Johnny and Tommaso in NXT? Because now both of them are there. You know, will they continue? You would think that this would be the end, but you know, I've heard a lot of people thinking this may even continue at some point with the title on the line. I don't necessarily think that this needs it, and you can put both of these guys on the main roster anytime.
Well, you can, but the problem is you keep the guys too close to each other. Like this match, although it quote unquote settled things, it didn't really settle anything. It's not like Ciampa now respects Johnny Gargano. Ciampa's still a heel. He's still a jerk. Johnny may have vanquished his foe for the time being, but it's something that small locker room as NXT is, with these two guys both in NXT, eventually they're going to come to blows again. You know, on their quest towards the NXT championship, perhaps. So until you divide them by shows for a long enough duration of time that this can kind of die down like a Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens kind of thing, it's always going to be there. So I think because they do it so well, fans are going to want to see more of it. And so I think it shouldn't happen. I don't necessarily right away, but I think it's destined to happen again somewhere down the line.
I guess now we can lead into WrestleMania 34. We're not going to go over the whole entire show. We did record an episode I did with Evan Weston and Dustin Hales reviewing the show. catch that on the FOW Radio Network, the WrestleMania 34 review. But Danny, I want to kind of get your thoughts on three things here. You know, three things that are pretty important coming out of WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan's return, Ronda Rousey's debut, and Brock Lesnar defeating Roman Reigns and continuing to work with WWE.
Okay, Daniel Bryan's return. I think he looked really good. Of course, you know, based on that match, it did not appear that he had really missed too many steps. You know, it wasn't like he was noticeably taking fewer risks. You know, in that tag match against the caliber of opponents that he was against, he looked like he could have main evented WrestleMania again. Very, very happy, very exciting, very fun, optimistic towards what else he can do in WWE now that he's a full-time competitor again. I think Ronda Rousey looked really good in her match. I think the match was laid out well, with Triple H and Stephanie, and Kurt Angle playing all their parts to make Rousey look really good, look really credible, look comfortable and confident in the professional wrestling ring, as opposed to the transition initially. They may not have that confidence in their abilities. There's missteps and these kind of things, but that match, there was a lot of storytelling in between the moves and the segments, and I felt it looked really good. The crowd reacted very well, was very, very into the match and all the action, which, I mean, is the most important thing. You know, do the people enjoy it? And it seemed that everybody did, from the entrances, you know, of Triple H and Stephanie coming down on the bike side by side, the famed water spit together, you know, all the way to Stephanie and her you know, defense against the armbar, Ronda kind of talking trash as she's breaking Stephanie's last defense before she snaps that armbar and almost breaks Stephanie's arm off her body. I was afraid that it was going to have to be, that the match was going to be heavily toted by Edge with only a small interaction with the women. Really good. You know, Ronda, you know, stepping toe to toe with Triple H, and even kind of back, I thought was done really well. You know, apart from some of Trapcom kind of standing there shaking his arms going, like, and none of the shots are hitting him because he's covering up too well. But I thought that looked well. And then Brock Lesnar winning was kind of a surprise. Hard way blood of him cracking open Roman's skull was a little surprising as well. Apparently signing yet another contract by both sides of WWF, UFC, if he so desires money, you know. I think a lot of people thought that this was Roman's time and that Brock was done, but throw that swerve at us when it comes to Brock.
Yeah, well, Brock is the man, I guess.
He apparently is. They want to keep you guessing about what he's going to do. And, you know, people definitely were shocked by his win there.
I say that, you know, they played us real well, because everything was leading to this being the moment will, you know, Roman would reign supreme, finally, you know, get that belt from Brock Lesnar and have his title run. But no, we were fooled. Vince McMahon, you know, played us like puppets. You know, he threw his money at Lesnar. Lesnar said, all right, give me the money. I'll give you the few dates that you pay me for. And how long this contract is going to be for, people say it's not going to be the long-term three-year contract. But nobody knows. Only the people that are supposed to know. So I guess we'll find out in the next upcoming month or two, with everything else going on. But yeah, WrestleMania 34 was quite a show. I was there live in person, so I was like trying to just appreciate my first ever WrestleMania live. It was an awesome experience. I can't wait to do it again, but I will, because there's no way I'm going to cold stinking New York in the beginning of April. I don't care how people say it's not going to be cold. I've seen pictures. I've seen weather predictions. I've seen what the weather has been in New York this past week. There's no way I'm going to be in an outdoor stadium for 7+ hours. No way. I'll stay home, and I'll probably be able to save a lot of money than trying to be in New York for like 5 or 6 days.
You know, they always say that New York can play, so not just the wrestling, but you think about hotel stay, you think about food. I could see that you could end up spending a whole lot of money very, very do the easy route. Ouch. You know, pay $100 to streaming services, all the shows you want, and just enjoy it at home this year.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe we can get together and actually watch it together. Have a WrestleMania watch party.
Monumental.
It's going to be something else. I'm not going to be there live. I'm taking the year off. Okay. WrestleMania happened. And of course, with the WrestleMania comes the day after WrestleMania. And we got a lot of stuff that we got thrown. But first and foremost, we're going to talk about Paige. Paige announced finally she is retiring from active competition due to the injury that she suffered back in December. And she is done for good. I mean, not surprised to anyone. I mean, that was probably the worst kept secret in pro wrestling, as it had been hinted at for months that her career was over. But it finally was made official. She left Absolution, and now she is the new general manager for SmackDown Live, as Daniel Bryan is back as an active competitor, and he wanted nothing to do with the commissionership, with the general manager position. I don't blame him.
But I think they wanted to do it. I said that she debuted, you know, in New Orleans the night after Mania, when, you know, for the main roster, winning the women's championship or the Divas championship, whatever the heck. So I think that was the thing they wanted to do before she's there in New Orleans again. And could kind of officially say, yes, I will not be returned to the ring. You know, let's see how her personality and is able to develop and come out as the general manager. Some people can find a second wrestling personality. Others aren't as lucky and just aren't able to make the transition. See what she's able to do as director of SmackDown now.
Yeah, it's definitely cool that she was able to find a spot where she can still work, be with the company. Of course, I knew they would definitely would take care of her, as they were going to take care of Daniel Bryan. If that was it for him, as they retired him. I wonder if when Paige eventually decides to do something else or returns to the ring, as she said on her promo that Daniel Bryan gave her hope that one day she'd be able to come back. But if she does, or she goes to something else, I wonder if they'll use the general manager spot for every wrestler that has to retire.
May just be a row of general managers of wrestlers who've had to retire from active competition until they're playing for other ventures or are somehow able to return to the ring in the next several years.
But with that, also, we got a lot of debuts, call-ups to the main roster from NXT, and a few returns, per se, to the WWE. As you mentioned, Ember Moon made her Raw debut. Now she's part of the Raw roster. Then we also saw No Way Jose make his debut. defeating John Skyler. Now, Ember Moon, I think, great addition. You know, she's going to do great in the women's division in the main roster. No Way Jose, though. I mean, he's coming with a party crowd a la Adam Rose. How long do we give this character?
6 months before they have to do something else with it. I mean, he could flourish and become really big, and make it last a long time. WWE loves their dancing big guys. But it could very well play out very quickly, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't really have much hopes for that character. I never thought that character had legs to begin with. That's a NXT thing, not going to work in the main roster. They'll probably be a comedic act. If he doesn't work out, eventually it'll be gone.
Well, some of these are different ways. Sometimes they work really well in NXT and then they flop on the main roster. Others, it's the other way around. It was fun in NXT. Maybe it becomes a humongous sensation and he becomes, Funkasaurus and has a very lucrative career for a while.
Then the Authors of Pain made their Raw debut. And, well, it looks like it's going to be without Paul Ellering as they decide to leave him behind. They don't need him anymore.
He got them to where they need to be, and now they can they're writing the next chapter without him. My question then becomes, is he done with as a manager, or does he return to NXT and try to find somebody else to kind of take under his wing? I was kind of shocked when he debuted as their manager, because it's not as though he's a guy who's done a whole lot in wrestling prolifically, since his time with the Road Warriors. So I don't know if this was just kind of a thing they brought him in for a while, and now he's kind of, maybe he'll move to doing some backstage help with NXT, character development or something. But I think he, I'm kind of curious to see where he goes. Does he stay, or does he keep floating on and go to somewhere else?
That'll definitely be interesting. Also making their, returns from injury, Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy. So those are two welcome returns. And then we got the return of Bobby Lashley.
That was a big surprise. I had not heard anything about Lashley coming back to WWE. We had, heard talks that he wasn't re-signing with TNA, and that there was possible interest on WWE's end, but that was a secret that they seemed to hold pretty well. I've never been a huge fan of his, but I know that they'll push him as a top guy, and he's more than capable. I think he's rounded out his time in MMA. I think he's rounded out his game a lot more in professional wrestling. As evident with his time in TNA and the matches he was having there with some people. So I think it's a good investment for WWE for a little while to have Lashley back.
And the last call up, as part of the Superstar Shakeup, Drew McIntyre. And now we have 3MB all in the same roster together, although in different groups.
We're getting the band back together, man. We're getting the band back together.
When Ambrose returns from injury, the Shield versus 3MB.
That's it. That's gonna be that's gonna be the hottest feud leading into Survivor Series or SummerSlam or whatever. It's gonna be the Shield versus the 3-man band. It's gonna sell out Madison Square Garden.
We've seen backstage, skits of things with segments with Bullet Club members, with Finn, AJ, and the Good Brothers. you know that we got to see at least them bump into each other backstage, and they're going to be catching it on camera, just kind of like acknowledging each other, walking away, or whoever knows what. It's going to be somewhat funny and hilarious when it happens, but I mean, we kind of talked about just, you know, how each man came back, you know, in their own ways. First, we have Heath Slater, and then he becomes the first ever SmackDown Live Tag Team Champion. And then we got Jinder, and then he becomes this main eventer, wins the WWE Championship, has an amazing run, maybe not necessarily inside the ring, but creatively. And then, of course, we've seen everything that Drew did in the indies, and then going and winning the championship in NXT. And the comeback story for all three guys has really been cool to see. As three guys who they had nothing for a few years back and just let all of them go. And now they're all back, and they're important parts of the machine in some way.
Yeah, I think the funnier, rather than getting them back together, I think it would be funny to have periodic sketches where, like, Heath Slater's trying to get the band back together, and they're like, dude, come on. Like, I got bigger stuff going on. Like, you know, like, what do you, like, who's this guy? What are you hanging around with this other weird long-haired guy for? You know, like talking about Rhino and stuff. Like, we can't be a three-man band. You got Rhino here with you. We'd be four guys. It's not the same, like. I think that would be funnier with Heath trying to be the dopey one, trying to get the band back together, and like Jinder and Drew keep trying to blow him off.
Yeah, it's they got to do it at some point, and who knows, dude? That reunion match, if it ever happens, I mean, it probably will never happen, but if it happens, it's gonna get a pop.
Oh yeah, it's gonna get a pop. It's yeah, even yeah, just for the yet again, just for the moment, just for the sake of like. Them getting together, and then even if they like, you know, they fall apart during the match, you know, Jinder walks off or turns on them or something, like, yeah, I think it could be really funny.
And then on SmackDown side, we got to see the debut of the Iconics, not the Iconic Duo, but the Iconics of Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, as they attacked SmackDown Live's Women's Champion Charlotte Flair, who then was the victim of the Money in the Bank cash-in as Carmella cashed in and won the championship. But so we got the Iconics on SmackDown Live, as well as Sanity, which they so far announced Eric Young, Alexander Wolfe, and Killian Dane. No Nikki Cross.
Surprising to me. Yeah, being that they showed the graphic without her, and she's pretty much been an integral part of that team ever since the onset. A little disappointed that they're not trying to feature her, even if they do bring her up. And if they don't bring her up, I'm extremely disappointed because I like her character as their as the member of their group. So that would lead me to question what's going on with her. What do they do with her? You know, does she keep the same character, or does they repackage and rebrand her? Who knows? So that's my bigger concern with that is, what about Nikki Cross? Is I'm a big fan of hers and her work with as the character.
And then to me, one of like my favorite call up of the year, and one that I think I said would definitely happen. Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega are going to SmackDown Live. He had nothing else to do on NXT. He put over Aleister Black. He's main event roster.
Yeah. Well, and you seem to think that SmackDown would be a better fit for him. You know, he would have more opportunity. He would get a bit more spotlight to shine on SmackDown. You know, apparently people in WWE agreed with you from listening to the Fans of Wrestling show and decided to go that way. Happy to see what the main roster holds for Andrade. He's, I mean, as you and I have talked, this guy's the limit. he can be this big Latino star that they've been wanting for several years and have difficulty finding consistency with that guy. So they just have to push him and pull do his thing and put him in the right stories with the right people. You know, this big Latino crossover guy that they've been wanting, they tried to have with Del Rio, but Del Rio just, they were inconsistent with him. He didn't seem to catch on the way they wanted. And then of course Del Rio's personal actions and stuff, kind of shot himself in the foot. Hopefully Andrade can keep his head on straight, and be a big star for WWE for years to come.
Absolutely. Of course, lastly, before I forget, Big Cass came back from injury as well, and he's on SmackDown Live as the last of the injured returns. So now, the shakeup. Here's everybody who goes from SmackDown Live to Monday Night Raw. Jinder Mahal with Sunil Singh. The Riot Squad of Ruby Riot, Liv Morgan, and Sarah Logan. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who were signed by Stephanie McMahon as free agents. Zack Ryder, Breezango, Natalya, Mojo Rawley, Dolph Ziggler, who is now seems to be partnered up with Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, Mike Kanellis, The Ascension, Bobby Roode, and Chad Gable.
All right. Those are all going from SmackDown to Raw.
Those are all going from SmackDown to Raw.
Raw seemed to get a pretty good good mix of people there. You know, I mean, we saw some of them debut and make impacts. Others they just showed graphics for, and some weren't even really mentioned on television. So who left Raw and went to SmackDown?
So here we go. Going from Monday Night Raw to SmackDown Live. The Miz, Jeff Hardy, Absolution, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, Samoa Joe, Asuka, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, The Bar, R-Truth.
I'm surprised that R-Truth, I feel that I haven't heard anything from him in a long time. Was he injured? Is he kind of returning from the injured list?
Possibly. Maybe they just didn't have anything for him creatively.
Yeah. So it seems that at least by sheer number, Raw seemed to get more people.
Yes. Well, they have 3 hours.
That's true. They do have more time, as you know, essentially.
Right, but think about this, Danny. All right. I want you to pick a winner for the Superstar Shakeup. You know, which show wins? But before you do, let me tell you this, all right?
Raw always wins.
SmackDown Live has Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Andrade Cien Almas, Nakamura, The Miz, and Samoa Joe.
Well, Miz and Joe are the only two that were actually moved by the shakeup. The others were already there. Or
I understand this, but I'm just saying, think about the roster. You know, forget the 2000s, you know, SmackDown 6. Right here are the SmackDown 6.
Yeah, that's what people are saying, like the possible that it could, depending on how they're played and booked against each other and all this, they could be the new variation of SmackDown 6. They control that show. Great stories, great action. I mean, it's because Vince McMahon always makes sure of that. But I think that as far as wrestling action goes, you know, fans of SmackDown definitely could be winning.
Given a grade overall after the shakeups right now, who do you think is looking like the better brand?
I mean, I think Raw is going to do what they do, but I think SmackDown has a possibility to have better wrestling action.
Oh yeah. I think right now on paper, SmackDown Live is now the number one brand. they are the A show. You know, if you think about it, all these wrestlers they have. I mean, Raw would always be the show to the WWE, to Vince McMahon, but to the fans, who many have said that in the recent months and whatnot, 205 Live has become the A show just because of the wrestling and the booking and whatnot. I think the SmackDown Live with this current roster, thanks to the shakeup, is looking like could possibly be one heck of a 2018 for wrestling fans to enjoy, and maybe the best brand, depending on the type of matchups we get. We already got AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan last week, although it was, you know, interrupted by Shinsuke Nakamura, but just the kind of things that we could see in the future, you know? We're finally going to get to see that payoff, Daniel Bryan versus The Miz, that we've been waiting for over a year to see.
Finally get the Nakamura versus Bryan match that pretty much lured and Nakamura hoped for when he's one of the reasons he signed WWE was supposedly because he wanted that match. Now he has the opportunity. Now he has this new, you know, this new heel persona, you know, it would play very well to the underdog of Daniel Bryan. Andrade Cien Almas with all these first time matches, you know, essentially coming at him.
Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles, Samoa Joe versus Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, in 2018 in the WWE ring. I think that blows a lot of minds just thinking about it.
I mean, you and I that have followed these careers and have seen these matches happen.
Yeah, for 15 years. Yeah. For 15 years, we've been watching a lot of, with some of those guys, seeing them compete, knowing what they're capable of, then can be capable of now. I think that SmackDown definitely is the one to keep the eyes on.
So as we're, you know, getting our excitement about the rosters and everything going on, you know, after the shakeup, we have Backlash to look forward to on May the 6th, but before then, Saudi Arabia paid for quite a big show coming up on April 27th.
Apparently Saudi Arabia spared no expense, as they often don't. They never spare an expense. They're Saudi Arabia. They're extremely wealthy.
Well, if you have the money and, you know, you have enough money, we've learned WWE will give you whatever show you want. You just have to show them the money.
That's it.
And Saudi Arabia showed them the money. Here we go. April 27th is going to air at 12 p.m. noontime. Pre-show at 11 a.m. live on WWE Network for only $9.99. Free for first-time subscribers. In no particular order, the greatest Royal Rumble match, a 50-man Royal Rumble match. Not a battle royal. It's going to be Royal Rumble style, you know, with intervals.
Staggered entrances. They'll probably shorten it down to maybe 60 seconds each.
I think, you know, it's going to be tight in time. It's going to be any time between 30 to 2 minutes, just depending on how they feel it.
Gotcha.
Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship in a steel cage match. Seth Rollins will defend the Intercontinental Championship versus Finn Balor, The Miz, and Samoa Joe in a ladder match. AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship. Jeff Hardy will defend the United States Championship versus Jinder Mahal. Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy Woken Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt versus The Bar for the vacant WWE Raw Tag Team titles. The Bludgeon Brothers versus The Usos for the SmackDown Live Tag Team Championships. Cedric Alexander versus an opponent to be determined next week in a gauntlet match on 205 Live for the Cruiserweight Championship. John Cena versus Triple H. And The Undertaker versus Rusev in a casket match.
Did it go back to Rusev? It was Rusev, and then they said No, we're doing Chris Jericho.
Yeah, Lana didn't want Rusev to be in it, but then Lana changed her mind, and now she's allowing Rusev to be in the casket match.
That's the story they're using now.
So, yes. Oh, so Chris Jericho will be in the 50-man Battle Royal. So we're going to see a whole lot of names in this Battle Royal. I'm hoping that we'll see a couple more surprises. I mean, it all depends on how big the tab for Saudi Arabia is. So the surprises will definitely cost more money. But if the king or president or whatever they call themselves in Saudi Arabia or want to pay for it, they'll get whoever they want. Except for women. They will not get women because that's not allowed.
No, they get to stay home. They get to take the shirt the weekend off.
So quite a show here. I mean,
that's pretty much stacked as stacked gets. Yeah, you know, as far as exhibition style, as most of those, there's little to no story between the matches. You know, but it's exhibition style, top matchups. You know, for a big money event in a big money deal.
So that'll be the greatest Royal Rumble live from Saudi Arabia, which is why it's the early time here in the United States. But you know what? 12 o'clock, not a terrible time for me. I'll be working. People can't see me doing the quotes with my fingers while I say this.
Yes. You can have the show going next to your computer.
Indeed. So I'll be watching it live. That's going to be a fun one to watch. Now, let's change subject. I think we've basically made this a full WWE show just about. But hey, that's what's going on. But, you know, this is something that you and I have been talking about for over a year. Maybe even longer. This caused me to stop watching a pro wrestling company for just about a year. I can't remember exactly. The Women of Honor. They needed a championship, and I talked about it. I boycotted for it. And, you know, I did get to meet Kenny Omega at Festival of Honor.
Did you talk to him about it to make sure that he was on the up and up with it?
No, I could only tell him how much I loved him without sounding like a crazed lunatic that needed to get a restraining order.
Gotcha.
But I kept it short and sweet. I was also very, very nervous. So picture to be posted later. But man, seeing Kenny Omega live, you know, in person and then wrestling in the singles match was great. But it was great to also be there, Super Card of Honor, to see the first ever Women of Honor champion be crowned. Of course, they had the semifinals as a part of the Festival of Honor pre-show kind of matches. And Sumi Sakai defeated Tennille Dashwood, and Kelly Klein defeated Mayu Iwatani. So there you go, your finals. Kelly Klein, Sumi Sakai. Now, for Ring of Honor fans, Women of Honor fans that have followed, you know, each women, have investigated, have done whatever, or that have followed these women, that know the history, you know that, okay, these probably were the two right choices for the finals. You know, you got Sumi Sakai, who was in the first ever women's match in Ring Honor history back in 2002. And then you have Kelly Klein, who was one of the original Women of Honor roster members when the Women of Honor division was, you know, formally created. You know, they've had women's matches here and there since 2002, but the birth of the Women of Honor, of course, Kelly Klein being on the second ever Women of Honor standalone TV episode. So we got two different eras, but two originals of each era in women's wrestling for Ring of Honor. And then you get Sumi Sakai defeating Kelly Klein to become the first ever Women of Honor champion.
Yes. As you mentioned, Sumi Sakai being pretty much with Ring of Honor since, you know, the first women's match in 2002. I remember seeing her in a women's match in 2003 when I went, she was in part of the daytime kind of pre-show for Final Battle 2003. I remember seeing her in a matchup there against Alice Danger, I believe. And so I've seen her since then. And I remember it just really enjoying her at that time. So she's lived in the States for a lot of years and really helped kind of mold and shape, the grouping of the Women of Honor, you know, that Kelly Klein, Amanda Leon, and several others are a part of. So seeing Kelly in there was really good too. I think Kelly's pretty much been the main top bad guy throughout the newer incarnation of the Women of Honor. Seldom defeated. I think this was pretty much her first like one-on-one clean kind of loss. And Sumi Sakai, essentially the founder of the Women of Honor. Good that they finally have a championship. Happy that they were able to kind of give Sumi Sakai that moment and give her, proper recognition for all she did to bring Women of Honor to the point that it's at now. And just, you know, excited to see more and where it goes. You have a lot of strong women still in that division, a lot of people they can bring in and out. There's a lot of independent women's wrestling and a lot of hot competition out there. So I'd be interested to see how this division continues to grow now that they finally have a championship after seemingly way too long for them just to be fighting kind of in exhibition matches. So they have a belt ready to fight for it. Sumi Sakai will no doubt take on all challengers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I have mentioned how Kelly Klein was one of my picks to win the whole thing. And I thought that would be the way to go. But I understand going with Sumi Sakai. First of all, she's the fatty face in the match. And also going with the fact that she was in the first ever women's match in Ring of Honor history to becoming the first ever, you know, Women of Honor champion. I think there's a lot of sentimental value, and I also feel like it's not a bad way to go, but like you said, she'll be a fighting champion, she'll take on all comers, and, you know, whether it's, you know, a short reign or a long one, it'll be a good one, and if anything, it's going to bring honor, you know, which is the biggest thing that ROH and WAOH stand for. So definitely an interesting mix there, but I love how they, you know, they had the two different eras going one-on-one in the finals for the championship. That was cool. It sucks that I don't think people really were really into the match. At one point, they had to bring in some of the other Women of Honor contendants out there to kind of like get things going and pumping up the crowd and being ringside.
That might have been planned even before then, just to also do the whole like showing the importance of it kind of thing.
It could have been, but that crowd was just not reacting so well to the match.
Well, that may also be why they waited so long to do all this, because they felt the crowds weren't reacting the way they wanted them to.
Now, not sure what's next. I haven't gotten a chance to go back and watch the last couple of episodes of Ring of Honor. So I'll be catching up on those sometime soon. I'm still on my WrestleMania hangover, even literally over a week and a half later. I think it's been that long, almost 2 weeks now. But yeah, it was great to be there live and to see the first ever women of honor champion be crowned. I felt really strong about this championship, as you know, Danny, and all our listeners, as I boycotted Ring of Honor for well over a year, I believe, for not having this title. Better late than never. I will say this. I'm glad that it's finally here. All right. So with that, before we do close out our show, we did want to add something to every episode, something that comes from you know, our minds, our hearts, our brains, whatever you want to call it, and just different segments to kind of make things a little bit different every week. And this week, we're going to start with our top five, which will be something that we'll do every month. We'll just come out with a top five of something ahead of time, and then we'll share it on the episode. This week, Danny and I are going to share what our favorite five wrestling matches of all times are. These are not what we think are the best matches ever.
Yeah, not like the most important in history, but some of our favorite and most enjoyable matches, personally.
Absolutely. So it's just our personal preference. So don't go out there and go crazy about how ridiculous we are for some of the matches we're going to
do. Go crazy. We want to hear your feedback. We want to hear, you know, if you agree, if you disagree, you know, why you think certain matches, you know, why you do or do not like our picks, possibly, you know, some of your own picks on Facebook and Twitter. Please feel free to kind of share those and open the discussion further than just the Yellow Man and myself.
Indeed. Yes. So with that, Danny, I give you the floor. Give me your favorite five matches of all time.
Okay. So my five, we're going to start at five and work our way up. Now I tried to, yet again, try to pick matches that I find enjoyable, ones that I've watched many times, that even though I've watched them, you know, 10 or more times, that every single time the story of the match draws me in. I find myself getting pumped and hopping off my couch for near falls and stuff. I've seen the match a dozen times. I know how it ends, but I'm still finding myself getting drawn into the story. So I start with AJ Styles versus Minoru Suzuki from the G1 Climax 2014. That happened in August 1st of 2014. Fantastic match. It was during AJ Styles' run as the leader of the Bullet Club. To me, it's amazing contest, a lot of amazing back and forth. It was that 2014 Climax was kind of when I got back into New Japan, you know, due in part to the Bullet Club and AJ Styles being there. So I was getting to see some of these guys, if not the first time ever, for the first time in a long time. So this match with Suzuki and AJ Styles, just amazing, amazing work. One of my favorite parts in the match. Suzuki seated down and AJ's kneeling behind him and puts the gun to his head and goes to pull the trigger. Suzuki reaches up and grabs AJ's finger and nearly rips it off his hand. You know, because he's Minoru Suzuki and he pretty much just doesn't give a shit. He'll break your fingers. He'll break your neck. He doesn't care. So amazing match. I love it. Go to number four, Bryan Danielson versus Takeshi Morishima from ROH's Manhattan Mayhem 2. It was also in August, but it was August 25th of 07. It was the first in their series of five singles matches that they would have against each other. I love all the matches in the series. I love the story the series tells. This match, to me, just – I love Takeshi Morishima in Ring of Honor. I loved his title reign. I thought he was an absolute monster destroyer beast and just did amazing in Ring of Honor. And one of the things that helped make this match special and that makes a lot of matches special to me is we talk about being drawn in. And sometimes when you know a competitor becomes legitimately injured during the match, it helps you suspend that disbelief even further. so that you are sucked in because you know the person's hurt. You know they're physically fighting through. So during this match, very early on, Bryan Danielson had his orbital bone on his face cracked, one of his retinas detached from his head. That's the match. They fought on another 10 or 15 minutes. So every single time that he would go for a shot towards that side of his face, it was grimacing. Brian was pretty much running away, squinting half his face half time because the bones cracked and he couldn't see out of that eye. He eventually had to take time off, have surgery to repair his eye, which even after the surgery initially, he was only at 80% vision. I certainly hope that that's improved greatly since then. But so that match to me is just one every single time. I know the exact hit where the damage happens and I grimace and wince. And throughout the match, just he keeps fighting and keeps fighting. Just fantastic. Number three, I'm going with another ROH match from Supercard of Honor 2 back in March of 07. BJ Whitmer versus Jimmy Jacobs steel cage match. The culmination of a year and a half long feud. They were tag team championship partners together. Then they had a falling out, and then you brought in the whole Lacey element and the ballad of Jimmy and Lacey and BJ or Lacey trying to keep them together as a team. And then BJ decided to go off on his own and Jimmy doing the, you know, trying to win her love and affection by defeating BJ Whitmer. Violent cage match. Yet again, another match where guys got severely injured. Jimmy Jacobs tore apart his knee really bad, had to have surgery, missed at least 6 months of action. Both men suffering concussions and cuts and requiring stitches, I think. But this was a feud that was 18 months of back and forth and back and forth, and this was the culmination. Expertly done by Jimmy Jacobs and BJ. Amazing storytelling, gruesome action as they're at one point they have each other by the hair and the head with spikes at the same simultaneously. Jimmy wins with a off the top of the cage through a table that BJ Whitmer's laying down on after Jimmy has already blown out his knee. He's still able to climb up to the top of the cage and leap off. Go to match number two, one of my favorite technical matches, easily one of my favorite women's matches. It's the only women's match on my top five, surprisingly, probably to most people. Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch from NXT TakeOver Unstoppable in May of 2015. It was Becky Lynch's kind of coming out party, as she's even described it on the Jericho podcast. Sasha was champion, the sidekick of Sasha, and was looking to make it out on her own. This was the first real high-profile singles match Becky Lynch had had in NXT. She kind of was fine-tuning the steampunk character, the new persona, came out with the blazing orange hair, the full entrance, the steam rising up, and the coat and the goggles. It's technically done similar to what we talked about with Ember Moon and Shayna Baszler, as there was a lot of heart and determination, both women focusing their plan of attack, as at the time the bank statement by Sasha was also an arm trap submission, not just her pulling on the face. So she was working over the arm and the neck of Becky as Becky was working on the arm, trying to set up for her disarmer maneuver. Amazing storytelling, selling back and forth. Becky comes up on the short end and she goes on to become, you know, first SmackDown Women's Champion. More championships in the and my number one pick, match I've watched easily two dozen times, if not more. Two of the best performers in the world, Roderick Strong versus Zack Sabre Jr. from Evolve 45, back in July of 2015. 20 plus minutes, two top level athletes, wrestlers, performers, storytelling within their grappling. Just outstanding. You have, you know, the difference, the slight difference in styles where Roderick is speed and power and Zach wants to break you down, take you down and try to rip your arm out of your body. Amazing match. just, I don't even know what to say about it. But yes, every single time I'm on the couch, I'm jumping at near falls. I'm popping for submissions. You know, when they finally climb to the rope to break a submission, I am invested. So that is my top five. It's hard. I'm not somebody who usually keeps a running top five list in my head. So last few days I had to kind of compile, narrow down, organize. But as of this moment, it could change if you ask me 2 weeks from now. But as of this moment, those would be some of my top five favorite matches to watch. I could watch every single one of those matches tonight and be just as invested as I was the first time I watched them.
That's quite a list and quite different from my list. But that's, hey, we have different tastes. We, you know, so check out. I'm going to go ahead and start at number five. Just like you, you've inspired me to do a countdown to number one. Number five. From Clash of Champions 9, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk in an I Quit match. The first time I ever saw this match wasn't live, but man, I just thought it was the craziest thing ever as Terry Funk and Ric Flair just were bloodied, you know, nearly kill each other with tables and making each other quit, and they would never quit. And then all the outside interference, we'd see Muta, we would see, you know, Gary Hart, Lex Luger, Sting, everybody just come out. It was crazy. And at the end of the day, you know, Ric Flair makes Terry Funk say, I quit. Now the Funkster, you know, I mean, he's one that, you know, has quit many times in his life, but still refuses to retire. But man, to see him there, and then after that, wanting to shake, you know, Rick's hand, but then Gary Hart is like, what the heck are you doing? And then they turn him in, and then now Terry Funk's a baby face by de facto, and then out comes the Stinger for the save. I mean, the match is just pure emotion for me. I mean, it's not the greatest match quality wise, but man, it's just to get my emotions riding. I mean, even as I'm talking about it, right, I want to go back and watch it right now, you know, just, you know, some blood there all over Ric Flair's hair. But it's just those kind of things, just to me, got a little wacky out there, you know, as hardcore of a match as, you know, one would be in the early 90s. With that, we're going to continue number four. Also Ric Flair, also Clash of the Champions. This is Clash of the Champions 1. Ric Flair defends the WCW or NWA Championship at this time, can't remember, versus Sting. Sting was a guy who people didn't know all too well at that point, right? He was just this big, blonde, muscle guy from Venice Beach. And man, they have a match that goes Broadway, the time limit, 60 minutes. They go, you know, they're one of the guys from the Wonder Years is, you know, a judge for the match. And that kind of was the, you know, it's wacky. I guess I like wacky stuff, right? But man, that match is what made Sting, you know, and it, not the last time that Sting and Ric Flair wrestled, they had a lot of other really good matches since then. But to me, that was probably, in my opinion, their best match, my favorite match of theirs. And yeah, it was great. Clash of the Champions 1, I think that was in the 80s. I could be wrong. I'm terrible with dates. I did not try to go back and look at these dates. I probably should have, you know, be a little more professional. But look it up. Clash of Champions 1, it's available on WWE Network.
There you go. It's on the network. It doesn't matter what the date is. You can find it that way.
All right. So now we go on to match number 3. Madison Square Garden. WrestleMania 10. A first ever. Again, maybe this is what makes it wacky. A ladder match. Not the first ever ladder match, as we know, the one happened a long time before. Well, not a long time. One happened before that, but the WWE would not recognize it. Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, two titles, one ladder, probably in my opinion, still my favorite ladder match ever. And you know, of course, Mr. WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, whatever you want to call him now, put on quite a banger of a show. And form to work, not only two great workers, but also you have the ladders you have to contend with. And man, it made it for such a great thing. We talked about ladder matches with TakeOver, for example, how, you know, all these spots. Well, here, the Spot Fest, right? The beginning of the Spot Fest. Shawn Michaels, he's your spot monkey from the 80s and 90s and beyond, back when he could do those kind of flippy stuff moves. So there you go. WrestleMania 10, first ever ladder match on a pay-per-view, and the first ever recognized ladder match on the WWE with, of course, Razor Ramon winning the match and becoming the undisputed Intercontinental Champion. Then we go on to match number two. All right. I have no clue where this happened, but it was WrestleMania 13. Again, we're going with the wacky, right? We had Ken Shamrock as the special referee, as we had an I Quit match. Maybe that's also the wacky thing. I like I Quit matches. Apparently, I got a thing for those. Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, I guess before he was Stone Cold. This is the second match within the 6 month span, as they had a fantastic match at Survivor Series the year prior. But here, it's, man, these two guys put on one of the best wrestling matches ever. Of course, all the blood. I think I have a thing for blood as well now.
Maybe so.
Stone Cold Steve Austin does not submit. He passes out to the sharpshooter, all bloody. And, you know, this is like probably one of the best ever double turns in pro wrestling history. And I think the seeds were planted, but this is basically where officially we went with Steve Austin as a babyface and Bret Hart as a heel. But my goodness, you know, we're talking about two of the best technical wrestlers. And of course, we didn't get to see all of the great technical wrestling that Steve Austin had, you know, when he was on the top, when he was on top in WWE. Because of injuries or whatnot, but man, the fact that this man was, and Bret Hart, the best probably technical wrestler ever, able to have that great match, an I Quit match, WrestleMania 13, it was fantastic. Go watch it. That's my number two. My number one is my favorite for many reasons. It was probably, in my opinion, The Undertaker's best performance ever. And it was also Shawn Michaels' last wrestling match ever, as WrestleMania 26 retirement match here. It was Shawn Michaels wanted that win against The Undertaker, and he wanted to avenge the loss against The Undertaker, put his career on the line, and The Undertaker victorious, but it sends Shawn Michaels right into the sunset. But man, what better way than one of the best, if not, to my opinion, the best wrestler ever, Shawn Michaels, going against The Undertaker. And we now see The Undertaker now, where people wonder, when is he going to retire, as, you know, his body's not the same. But look at the things that he was able to do in that match, you know, with those, you know, dives, and just the way that he had to move to, you know, match up against the showstopper in Shawn Michaels, because, you know, Shawn Michaels could go all out, and you had to equal that. You couldn't just, you know, be under par, because all those people would notice. And so, yes, to me, that is my favorite match of all time. Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, WrestleMania 26. All of these matches available on WWE Network. Check them out.
For only $9.99, you can find out how you can get your first month free.
We also want to hear what your favorite five matches of all times are. So tweet them at us at FOW Radio, hashtag FOW Top 5, and let us know what they are. We definitely are interested in knowing your picks, your matches. Maybe they're matches that we haven't watched.
Maybe they're ones we need to look at. Maybe they're ones we need to check out again, you know? Give a watch with a set of new eyes.
So, yes, that is our top five for this month. We'll come up with another list. If you would like to talk about, if you would like us to talk about a specific top five of anything, again, also tweet us at FOW Radio, hashtag FOW Top 5. Give us suggestions, and we can, you know, make lists. We'll be doing those every month. And with that, that is the show for today. We surely did miss the Scream Queen, but hopefully, health willing, she'll be back with us next week. So until then, check out all of our episodes of Defensive Wrestling Show on the FOW Radio Network. Subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and also check us out on the Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.